I'm here with one of South Africa's most distinguished writers, André Brink. Novelist, poet, essayist and playwright, after over 40 years writing, André has now decided to tell the story of his own life in a memoir, A Fork in the Road. André, what made you decide the time was right to address your own past?
First of all, there was a nudging from publishers, but it just happens that at a certain moment one feels that there's a weight accumulating inside yourself, like a water drop forming in a tap. And it's now time to fall and let go.
In your postscript to the book, you say this is not an autobiography. What do you mean by that?
I mean it in several ways, I suppose. One is the way that one associates with a painter, René Magritte, who paints a hat and then says, this is not a hat. Mine is slightly different, though, that I don't like the idea of autobiography, starting with 3 minutes past 11 at night when you're born and going on day by day, blow by blow, until you arrive at where you are at the moment of telling. So my approach was more random, I should imagine, taking several themes, almost different essays, concentrating on a different aspect of the many aspects of my life that have fascinated me.
You've obviously used your diaries over the years in the process of writing it. What was that like, looking back over the years at things that happened to you?
Painful, I think. Most of the time, sometimes very amusing, sometimes quite shocking in the sense that you wonder how on earth could you possibly have done or thought or said these things. So it is a very strange process and a very unsettling one in many respects. I suppose very much like going to a shrink and having to unpack everything that has happened to you, or either in reality or in your imagination. Because I often say now when people ask me whether there's anything else I'd like to do now, I can't wait to get back to fiction. And then one starts wondering, but how much fiction was there actually in the memoir? Because you start asking yourself about the borderlines between fact and fiction. And it is getting difficult sometimes to distinguish between, because you insert so much wishful thinking, so much possibility, conjecture, into what you have come to regard as the facts of your life, that to tear them apart, to find the different aspects, can be quite strange, fascinating, but also painful in many ways. And even things which you narrate which are pleasant suddenly have so many strings attached to them that trying to explore all of that can be a very laborious, curious, fascinating, but also unsettling process.
And I guess with your childhood, which you paint very, very vividly, some of those memories are from quite a long time ago, and some of them are stories that have been told to you by your parents, or that stories that you've told again throughout your life. And it must be hard to pick through what's real.
It is, and also I think there are so many me's involved in the process. I started off in such a very restricted, conservative household, with my parents being shaped totally by the ideology that also shaped apartheid. And I identified with that for so many years that in many respects I am a totally different person, and yet one cannot compartmentalize the different aspects, the different periods in your life. So in one way or another, they all flow together like watercolors on a page. And it can be quite difficult simply to structure something like that in your mind.
As a novelist, do you think you attempt to dramatize some things?
I've tried to resist the temptation, but I suppose inevitably it has a way of asserting itself here and there.
You also mentioned in your postscript your attempts to persuade Günter Grass to write an autobiography, and he told you, never, that's something I shall never do, I lie too much. He then went on to cause a storm of controversy with his own autobiography, Peeling the Onion. Do you think that with your own memoir you'll be touching any wounds that are still raw?
Oh, I think it's raw all the way. the thinking about it, the writing about it, brought everything so much more vividly than ever before to the foreground of my life, that the rawness is there, but to me also part of the appeal in wanting to write it, at the same time trying to resist it, I just had to do it. I knew that it would not let go of me unless I got it out of my system, if ever it is.
Have you shown it to some of the people that you write about in it that are still with us, and what have their reactions been like?
No, I haven't. Apart from my wife, who inevitably had to go through it with me. I haven't really shown it to anybody else. Not deliberately playing it close to my chest, but I think I'll wait with the airing of it for a little while longer.
Are there bits in it that you think are particularly going to cause any controversy or touch any nerves that you haven't spoken about before?
Oh, there's a lot that I haven't spoken about before, otherwise it would simply have become very boring to myself. And I think that's the worst thing a writer can do, boring her or himself. I find it difficult to think about specific, potentially searing bits that may really hurt people. I tried not deliberately to go for hurting people or exposing things, but trying to find a kind of rhythm, a kind of a sense of revelation and fairness in my own evaluation of the many things that have happened in my life. So, for better or for worse, I just have to let go now.
You've addressed or you've written about your relationship with Ingrid Jonker, which you say that you previously haven't been drawn into discussions of her life. What made you decide that now is the time to do that?
Right. So much has been written about her. She has featured so strongly in plays, in poems, in memoirs, in fiction over the years, that it seems to me that her image has become rather obscured and started becoming used for so many different purposes by so many different people that I would like to, it seems a bit presumptuous to say, set the record straight, but certainly as far as I'm concerned, to tell as honestly as I could the story of our relationship and try and find its place in my life.
You were told by your publishers in 1968 when you delivered Back to the Sun that you could never be a political writer, and Looking on Darkness was the first Afrikaans book to be banned by the South African government. You write that those two moments were the bleakest of your writing career. How did you manage to go on?
I think simply the driving force of writing itself, the compelling nature of the process of writing. I cannot ever conceive of me living without writing. So the activity of writing becomes a force in itself, which asserts itself, which drives one, and it's not for me to say no. I can simply go where it takes me.
You were writing in Afrikaans before the censoring of your works began, and then you started to write in English. What do you write in today?
In both.
So how does that work?
When I started writing in English, it was a matter of doing that alongside of the Afrikaans.
Right.
Because I didn't ever want to let go of the Afrikaans, since at that time, the early 70s, the late 60s, Afrikaans was still almost universally perceived as the language of apartheid. And it became immensely important to me to write in Afrikaans in order to demonstrate that the language was not exclusively tied to the ideology. The language was larger and broader and had more space, more room in it than the politics of apartheid ever could. So it was necessary to continue with the Afrikaans. And then the process of writing every book in the two languages became so much part of my whole procedure in producing a book that now that it is no longer necessary for censorship or other reasons to write in both, I cannot do without either, because they offer me two different perspectives, two different windows, as it were, on everything that I write. If I write a certain passage or a chapter or a book, say in English, then it becomes a compelling need to view it through the other language as well in order to discover things that I'd missed simply by the choice of language in the first instance. And then by moving to the second one, I then discover things that I'd missed in the first, and then going back to the first, I discover things that I'd missed in the second. So it can become an endless process. At a given moment, one has to decide, no, this is enough, stop. But the way there is such a fascinating process of constant discovery that I really cannot think of writing without doing it in the two languages now.
You say in the memoir that it's when you're first spoken to in English at your school that you become aware of language and you go out and you're just amazed by the prospects of what language can mean to you.
It was just the almost physicality of the language that fascinated me then. And that is a fascination, a sense of adventure that has stayed with me ever since. The discovery of words, the texture of words, the not necessarily the story one is telling in language, but the language which becomes story and the story that becomes language. It is a process of never-ending adventure, as I said.
You write of your meeting with Ariel Dorfman and other writers in Chile, where you resolved together that, although as writers you have nothing with which to counter the horrors of history except your words, that should never be underestimated. And you also talk of meeting Nelson Mandela, who told you that while he was in prison you changed the way he saw the world. How much difference do you think writing can make to the world?
I think that is one of the crucial questions, simply because it is impossible to quantify the effect of anything that one writes. You write a book because the book wants to be written, and what happens to it subsequently, what people make of it and do with it, you have no control over that and no way of measuring that. But when somebody like Mandela says to me that something that I'd written had changed the way in which he saw the world, then there is a sense in it of writing is not futile after all. It proves to me on a very personal level that there is a need for writing and there remains a need for writing in the world. And that is a wonderful way of sustaining oneself, of simply being able to go on.
So do you think that your writing, kind of starting with Looking on Darkness, I guess, which addresses apartheid issues, has made a difference in South Africa?
That is exactly what I cannot finally assert. It remains a matter of wishfully thinking it and of hoping. Perhaps it's that very hope that keeps one going. And that strange thing inside, that even if you can't quantify it, even if you can't summarize very neatly that this and this and this is what this and this and that book has achieved or done or arrived at, there is a need to write, and I cannot halt it, I cannot wrap it up. I can only go on writing because the writing itself takes me along and drives me along.
André Brink, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.